Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Weitzman. I'm a faculty member in English and theater and writing, and I'm also the instructor for humanities, Public Humanities English 284, the topic of which this term is documentary theater. And our class studied it. We looked at documentary theater plays, and then our charge was to create a piece of documentary theater, and that's what we're here to talk about today. I'm joined by three students from the class and our TA, and I would love for them to introduce themselves.
Hey, I'm Cece.
I'm Margaret. I'm a senior here at Stony Brook, and I'm an English major.
Hello, I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mimi. I'm the teaching assistant for this course.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me. I'm just going to start off, if you all don't mind, or even if you do mind, I'm going to start off by kind of defining documentary theater, what it is in general, for those that don't know. It's sort of an umbrella term, and it can include fact-based theater created from pre-existing documents like trial transcripts or things like that, or from first-person interviews investigating a topic or a current event or a theme, which is what we did. We did interview-based documentary theater. Regardless of the source material and the approach, documentary theater is created to tell stories about actual events and real people. So in thinking about this topic for the class before we started, I thought it was almost unfair not to deal with COVID in some way, that if it wasn't about COVID, we'd have to sort of actively and with effort avoid it, right? It's ever present. At the same time, we're so inundated with news stories and just things about first responders, vaccines, mutations, being bombarded all the time. So I offered the class instead two themes that I thought related to COVID, sort of yin and yang of each other: isolation and connection. And that was our way in. And it could relate directly to COVID, or the students could take that in any direction that they wanted to. And that yielded some pretty interesting results. So what I'd love is to hear from our collaborators, our students here, about the play that was made. And the first question I'll ask is for somebody to talk about what the interview process was. Each student did two interviews. Some did more, but two were required. And there was a very particular process that we used. So I'm wondering if one of you would like to talk about what that process was, how you went about doing it.
I mean, I was kind of nervous to reach out to people and kind of like be like, hey, would you be willing to interview? Because I feel like a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, they're kind of like standoffish, and it like had to be in person. But I think it just got to a point where I just put myself out there. And then when I actually got to the interview, I wanted it to be more of a conversation. So I didn't, like, we weren't allowed to bring any materials. So I feel like that's why my interviews kind of had, like, substance. It kind of felt more like, in a way, like a therapy session revolving, like, my topic especially. So I just kind of went to the mindset of having, like, an organic conversation versus it being an interview.
That's great. And it's important to distinguish that, because a lot of documentary theater pieces use verbatim text. So they'll bring an audio, you know, recorder with them to record the interview, or they'll take video of it, whatever. But in this, you know, there was none of that, as you said. And I'm curious in terms of what you decided in terms of who you wanted to interview.
I think the moment you said isolation and connection, I kind of immediately reflected on myself for a second. And like growing up, I feel like I always felt isolated. I didn't really have like an outlet to go to. So I thought that maybe I could turn this into something that was meaningful and productive. And although it was for school, maybe I could make people feel like they had an outlet and they had somewhere to talk. And I think not bringing the questions allowed that to be like an organic conversation. So, I mean, I was happy that they didn't feel that it was weird that it was for school. And I told them that if they didn't want their name being used, that was fine as well. So I think I just approached it in a way that was, maybe I can make this mean more than like a project, and then like actually speak to people and maybe feel like they got something off their chest. And I know for my second interview, like, I could tell in her, like, facial expressions that it was, like, a relief to, like, get some of this, like, stuff off of her chest. So, like, that's how I approached it.
Thank you. Cece, how about you?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, having it natural come about instead of having the questions there and a recording device, it felt like everyone was more comfortable talking about it and they were, like, more willing to open up. So my first interview, I interviewed my godfather, and he's a pastor and a veteran and does, like, a bajillion things in the community. So he was the first person that came to my mind. I was like, for a person who is or seems very connected to the community and the people around him, he's a very isolated person. And that was very clear during their interview. Like, he didn't really connect with anyone, even though he was doing all these things that are supposed to connect you to other people. So I thought that was very interesting. And, like, seeing a different side of him on a personal level was shocking, actually. Because you don't really think of, like, people around you like that. Like, oh, you're so isolated. You're so connected. They just are to you. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, suddenly when you have a theme that you're looking at, it puts a frame around everything, right? I mean, that's sort of what theater does, or that's sort of what happens when you pick a topic, that you're looking at everything through that lens, and it sort of creates that frame. That's really interesting. And that kind of self-contradiction of somebody who's so invested in community to also feel isolated, that's really interesting. And in your second interview, yeah, I know you had some trouble getting your second interview, and you ended up having to conduct the interview during work itself. Can you talk about that for
a
moment?
That was so rough. I tried to interview like two or three people before I interviewed at work the day before. Like, it was like, I think 2 hours, because I work nights at Cheesecake Factory and I just started there. So I was like, I don't really know anybody. Like, let me interview my boss. And he's giving me the runaround, like, oh, Wednesday, oh, Thursday, oh, next Monday, oh, Tuesday. I'm like, it's due tomorrow. I need help, please. And then he didn't show up the last day. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Class. And I asked my coworker, who's right across from me in the station. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll do an interview. You know, our manager sucks anyway. I don't know why you asked him. I was like, you're right. He actually opened up a whole bunch. Like, all I knew was his name. So now I know, like, half his whole life story, how his parents were in the hospital, all of that. And he, like, really opened up. And it was cool to see that he's not just, like, another cook or a person on the line. It's like, oh, like, he's a real person. We're not just coworkers. So now we're, like, good friends. We talk all the time. We exchange numbers. It's great. Like, I know his wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot now. So it really opens doors, like these interviews. I was like, oh, that's cool. But it was rough getting there.
I'm really glad I asked. I had no idea that you were still in touch, you know, or, you know, in that way with the people that you interviewed. So, Cece, this is a good segue, because the next task after you interview, you have to come into class and you perform that person, right? You get rid of your questions and you perform that person as if it's a monologue, their actual words in class. So for all of you, I'm curious in terms of what it was like to stand up there in front of the class and speak that person's words, right? Whether that was very sensitive material or whether that had certain demands, Cece, in terms of, you know, the physical life that you were portraying, or Kevin, even what it was like just to, you know, take that material and speak it, to have somebody else's words in your mouth and speak it publicly. I'm wondering what that experience was like.
Well, I admire you for doing that, Cece. That seemed really hard. But for me, like, I think the first thing that went through my head was, like, I'm not an actor. I've never, like, done theater or anything like that. And, like, growing up, I had, like, a lot of social anxiety. So, like, getting up in front of the class, like, was always really tough for me. This is, like, the first year that I've like really participated in classes for some reason. I think that might have to do with like COVID and like being at home, that like, but the interview process and like recreating it, I just kind of tried to, like, when I was interviewing them, I kind of tried to relate to them and like take in their emotions, because I feel like mental health is something that a lot of people can relate to. So I just tried to put myself in their shoes and then recreate it that way, and like keep their emotions and feelings like constantly in my head so I can remember how they were feeling when they said the words.
And then what did that feel like to actually be in class? Well, forget the class part in front of people for a second. I'm wondering, what does it feel like to have that person's words in your mouth or in your mind, or to suddenly be that person and say what they said? Did that have any, open up any other different angle in terms of your thoughts about them?
I think it just, in a weird way, makes me feel like connected to them. Like there's this connection to them that I feel like I'll always have, because we shared something and they knew that I was like reciting it. So they know that like I had to speak their words. So I feel like it's this weird understanding that like I know things that they've been through and I was listening to them and I had to recite them. So like, I think through this process, like being about connection, like I found these connections.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Cece, Kevin, how about you all?
I think personally, I oscillated between the two extremes of, I can definitely relate to this part of what this person is saying, sort of like what Margaret mentioned. I don't even have to act for this part. Like, I can just say it as myself. And then the other extreme was, mainly while I was conducting, especially my second interview, thinking to myself, wow, I can't believe you just said that. And now I will have to recite this in front of a classroom of people. So it's sort of like really finding ways to, again, like Margaret mentioned, to relate to the person you're speaking through. I guess not being afraid to, be vulnerable yourself when, especially when they say something that, you might understand, but you wouldn't necessarily say exactly that way, or something you might not like reveal at all.
That's great, Cece. Margaret, it's interesting what you said, because I've taught this class with theater students, and with theater students, often I have to sort of dial them back to be less performative, right? To kind of not add things, not add performance elements onto the person, to kind of keep it somewhat understated, or at least have some fidelity to the way the person said it and not try to enhance and make it more dramatic. In this case, you know, maybe it's the other way around, right? There's needing the courage to get up and in front of people. And it sounds to me a little bit like the connection to the person is helpful in terms of the recreation, that it's not so much you and your performance. It's, you know, having some integrity and showing us the person as they were, if I'm sort of reading between the lines a little bit and paraphrasing.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I felt. And I think there was a part of me that was like, I don't want to mess this up, because they deserve it to be like spoken the way that they said it and like how they presented it to me. And because it was like a serious topic, like I wanted to make sure that like the details were there and that their words were taken into consideration. And then this wasn't just something I got over with, and that was that. So I wanted to make sure that they were basically respected. And I think through that, I kind of got the courage to do it.
Yeah, I think that really came through when you did it. I think that was quite clear. Mimi, sorry, we've been ignoring you. But
it's totally fine, Ken.
You are the TA for this class, because you have taken this class before. So I'm wondering now, having gone through it once and now TA'd once, at least seen it, although you did do an interview for this, for this class, I'm wondering if anything occurred to you the second time, or you know, what are the thoughts that you've had in kind of being in a somewhat supervisory position here and going through this the second time? Is there anything that's occurred to you?
Well, it's just funny, because what's occurring to me right now is, as I listen to Margaret and Cece and Kevin talk about how these their interviews and their process developed connections with them, I'm just thinking back to like my first time doing this for 303, and how I did my interview and I never saw the guy again. And it was the craziest like time of my life, because that guy was really weird. And our topic then was mental health. So there was a lot of juxtaposition and similarities to the topic of isolation and connection, a lot of overlap. But it's just interesting to see how, you know, as Margaret said, after a time of such like social isolation with the pandemic, there is kind of more of a want and a desire to create connections with people that you might not expect to have developed them with.
I'm trying to think about how I want to follow that, but I was just thinking about a quote, and I wrote down a quote, and that's from Eric Jensen and Jessica Blank, who are the creators of The Exonerated, which we read in class, which is a documentary theater play, one of the most kind of impactful and celebrated documentary theater plays called The Exonerated. And they have a quote from talking about the process, that they were startled at just how much our psychology is contained in our speech. The rhythms, the words we choose, the order we put them in, the places we pause, stammer, change the subject, they reveal everything about us. So let me ask you another question, because now we are, now you all have done the script assembly process. So you took all those interviews we had five themes. They were mental health, language and ethnicity, advice, family, and navigating difficult relationships. And so you all were assigned, or not you weren't assigned, you chose one of those topics, and we created kind of five mini plays that worked together to create an entire play. So I'm wondering about your thoughts after having gone through the writing process, reflecting back on the plays that you've read or the process as a whole. Was there anything interesting about the writing, you know, or editing of it?
Definitely in the beginning, first when we were choosing the groups, I wanted to be in all the groups. I was like, can I just like be a traveler and just choose all the groups? And it was interesting to see after reading all the other group stuff that it wasn't the direction I thought they were going to go, especially with advice. I was like, oh, but that's like really good, but not what I was going to do, but still good. After the first draft, we had to like choose over some characters. I know this was with Margaret's group.
There were some hardcore negotiations that happened.
It was like half the class. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and it's like, are you going to give up your characters? Are you going to fight for them? Like, what do you want? And then what does your group want? So I know.
And just for context, it was that we didn't want so much overlap between characters and content. So that's what's being negotiated. Sorry,
and they were like,
keep going.
Completely overlapped. Like I'd read theirs. I was like, oh no, like one of this has to go. So like I understood where the professor is coming from.
The thing that I did notice from being a student to more of a supervisor is I totally felt for you guys in that moment, because I'm going to be honest, Ken, you are so intense with you got to cut it off. You got to have something totally different with those drafts. And I'm sitting there watching you guys fight and the frustration that was so just like palpable in that moment. You know, it's hard. People, you love your own writing. You love it. You think it's God's work right there. And when somebody tells you that something needs to go or you need to change or you need to compromise for like, especially with a project like this where you can't really have those overlaps because it's going to be presented to a more public audience. It's just, it's hard.
So I do think that experience is valuable, as painful and as conflict laden as it may have been. But I have to say, I did not sit with you all and negotiate. You all did it.
Yeah, professor's like, hash it out. I'm out. Like, what?
That's not an exact quote, but the sentiment, the sentiment is right.
I think what's interesting is like something that I didn't really think of until we like had the negotiation and everything. Like, I think I was more so just focused on creating this story, and then I was like, oh yeah, like there's gonna be overlap. I completely forgot about that. And then I was like, because so many, you didn't think about like, okay, there's probably like interviews that people like remember more than others or like spoke to them, so they're going to use those. And then I just think like for your standpoint, how do you navigate like maybe some interviews not being used, and like as a professor, like do you think beforehand maybe what if the content isn't what I imagined, or like what if I don't get the content that I feel like I want? Like do you have like any fear about that beforehand?
It's a really good question. I know going in it's gonna have to be different than what I imagined, right? Because if you all are gonna take the controls and it's gonna be up to you, and I want you to be empowered in terms of you know going the directions that you want to go in, and then ultimately creating the script that you want to, you know, that you want, I have to relinquish that control. I just have to plan as much as possible in advance to try to set you up for success and then kind of let it go. That being said, you all did meet, you know, before your second interview, the majority of people met with Mimi instead of me.
I'm just better.
People avoided me. They went to you and discussed what the second interview was going to be. So in that way, at least, you know, there was some Professor TA collaboration in terms of, hey, have you thought about this direction? Or at least bringing some experience to bear in terms of what we've seen and what we know is likely to, you know, bear greatest fruit or be as expansive as possible. But it's interesting. I mean, that's a really interesting part. I couldn't have guessed where it was going to go exactly. I just tried to pick the topic that would give you the greatest number of avenues to go and then let it be. I mean, but it's a good question. I love that you're able to switch perspectives. That's the best, in my mind, the best thing of what literature, what theater can do is forcing you to take other people's perspectives. So I appreciate you thinking about my process as
well. I mean, I know that I would be nervous, like, kind of like, you have to give us creative freedom, but to a certain point, you have to also be like, okay, you have to do this. And I feel like that's kind of tricky to like find that balance.
Yeah, it is tricky. I think that's really true. Have you taught before? You sound like somebody who's taught before. Okay. great. Well, let me ask if you have any other, you know, final thoughts, you know, what were it, just anything else that comes to mind about the class or what you're thinking about in terms of our final performance, which we've not done yet, which is upcoming. Any thoughts about that or anything else that you think we should include here?
I know you and probably Mimi too, you guys saw or rather read the scripts before we performed them. Was that different for you than what you imagined when you read it?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point about theater in general and something that I wanted to stress in class, that you're not writing this, you're not assembling this script for it to be read, right? You are putting words in people's mouths, right? You're not making them up, but this is meant to be performed and spoken aloud. And that's a very different thing than something that you're writing just to be read. That is not the same thing at all. Mm-hmm. So I think you get at something that's very, very important.
I almost feel like it's easier for someone who, like our class, has context of these interviews versus the audience who don't really have context. I feel like it will be easier for them to follow, honestly, because we know like all of this information. So I feel like we kind of nitpick things. We're like, oh, this doesn't work. But I think because we have these like subtopics and then this like topic, that it'll be easier for them to follow it, honestly.
Good. I hope so. And I think, you know, at the same time, I think one of the challenges for you all in creating the script and something that I tried to, you know, emphasize is that you have to take the mind of the audience member who has not seen any of these. So you really have to then shift that perspective and think, what are they going to understand? Right? You have so much knowledge. It's the curse of knowledge. You can't unsee what you've already seen. So you have to try to pick the perspective of the audience member who has no understanding of any of this, have not been introduced to these characters, did not see your original interview. And that's really challenging. I think a really important skill, but really challenging.
Yeah, that was hard for our group. They kept like, well, all of us were like, oh, this, like, we'll throw this part in, we'll throw that part in. But then, like, it's like, that doesn't make sense if you read it as someone who's never seen the interviews before. And it's like, oh, they know who she is. No, they don't. Oh, they know this, like, she has a scar. It's like, no, they don't. Like, we have to put these things in the play. We can't just say, like, oh, I was in the hospital. It's like, you need the context around it.
Maybe I'll ask one more question, if I may, because this recording that we're doing will be on the Pandemic Narratives website, and because, you know, the initial thought was COVID, but we went with these themes of isolation and connection. I'm wondering what your thoughts are in terms of, yes, some of the interviews.
I feel like it relates to the feelings of the pandemic, like obviously isolation, and I think a lot of the interviews tackle that feeling of loneliness, isolation, but I don't think it like feels like it revolves around COVID, which I think is a nice like refresher, because, you know, that's a big part of our world right now, obviously. So I feel like it was kind of nice to step away from that, but also have that underlying tone of something that we can all relate to, revolving the feelings that that pandemic brings us.
Nicely said.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to say, I think the more general themes allowed us to collect a lot more diverse narratives than we would have if we just decided to focus on the pandemic. Because at this point, I'm just speaking for myself. You sort of just like bring up the topic of COVID and everyone's sick of it. So I think, again, just like keeping it there as a subtext, because everyone's gone through this pandemic. You didn't really have a choice in the matter. And letting that sort of unearth the stories that people have to tell about loneliness, about past friendships, about connections they've made. I think it was worthwhile just having the extra wiggle room to speak to those kinds of people.
Nicely said as well. Cece, you were going to jump in.
Yeah. Whenever I think of the play, I don't really think of it with like a COVID context. I think of just the themes like isolation, connection, and all of the parts of the play, like the mental health, the difficult relationships, family, ethnicity. Those are like things people have dealt with for forever. So I'm just like thinking as a audience member, like, yeah, I've always dealt with these things, but with the subtext of COVID, it makes it all like more real. And you focus on not just like the sickness and the death, you focus on everything that society has dealt with everything that's going on, not just like, okay, everyone's in the hospital, like get your test, get your shot, wear your mask. It's like, what else is going on when you're at home or when you're calling your friend or stuff? So it's like a different perspective rather than what you see on the news and when you like talk about or have to follow like rules, guidelines.
You all are wonderfully articulate. I love it. Okay, I'm going to end us off maybe with quotes from Jessica Blank and Eric Jensen again, because I love them. This is again related to The Exonerated, their documentary theater play, when they were talking about the process. They said, "We believe, like the Greeks did, that theater's function is to keep society healthy by providing a platform for public conversation. We owe it to ourselves, to each other, and to our culture to make each other's stories our own." I really appreciate you all joining me and doing this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.